America's democracy hangs in the balance. While you're tuned into politics, Greer McVeigh, host of the Capital G podcast, will help you make sense of the news of the day and, more importantly, understand how what goes on in our nation's capital is important to you and your family. Greer shares insights and opinions in the lead up to the election, and then will help guide you through the anticipated aftermath and into the next administration. That's politics with a capital G.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Capital G podcast. I am Greer McVeigh, your host, and we are about to jump into some heavy-duty stuff, one, that I predicted in our last episode, and two, that we just have never seen in the United States. But first, we are going to talk about today's big number, and today's big number is 37. Do you know why it's 37? Today's big number is 37 because that's the number of charges in the indictment against the former president, Donald Trump. But first, let's hear from Jack Smith, who is the special counsel in charge of this investigation, as well as the January 6th. But we're not going to talk about that right now. We're going to talk about the quote-unquote documents case, the documents that Donald Trump had squirreled away at Mar-a-Lago. So let's hear from Jack Smith.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with felony violations of our national security laws, as well as participating in a conspiracy to obstruct justice. This indictment was voted by a grand jury of citizens in the Southern District of Florida, and I invite everyone to read it in full to understand the scope and the gravity of the crimes charged. The men and women of the United States intelligence community and our armed forces dedicate their lives to protecting our nation and its people. Our laws that protect national defense information are critical to the safety and security of the United States, and they must be enforced. Violations of those laws put our country at risk. Adherence to the rule of law is a bedrock principle of the Department of Justice, and our nation's commitment to the rule of law sets an example for the world. We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone. Applying those laws, collecting facts, that's what determines the outcome of an investigation. Nothing more and nothing less.
Well, let's not get too ahead of our skis, Mr. Smith. While he is right, we do have one set of laws, and everybody is supposedly, you know, held accountable to those laws equally. We know for a fact that does not happen, has not happened, has never happened in the history of the United States. But we also know that we seek to be a more perfect union. We're always trying to get better, blah, blah, blah. So I just wanted to put that out there. And yes, our big number is, did I say 37 or did I say 38? Because either of those numbers could be the big number. 37 is the number of counts in Donald Trump's indictment. And then his co-conspirator, Nalta, what is his name? Waltine Nalta has 38. He's got an additional charge. But this has been, this is a sad day for America. And people keep saying, I keep hearing pundits say, it's a sad day for America and we shouldn't gloat. We shouldn't this, that, and the other. And it is true. It is a sad day in America. But it is not a sad day in America that Trump is being held accountable for his actions. What's a sad day in America is that we have a former president who would do the things that he is accused of doing. And as Jack Smith said, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, not a court of public opinion and all that. That said, Trump has already admitted that he's done the thing. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, there are some things, the facts are not in dispute. It is not in dispute that he possessed the documents. It is not in dispute that they were at Mar-a-Lago. It is not in dispute or wherever. We're going to get into the indictment. You know, that he had them. None of it's in dispute. What's kind of sort of in dispute, I guess, would be his defense is that he was entitled to have that information. And the reality is he was not. So he can talk about, you know, the Presidential Records Act, and I adhered to the Presidential Records Act until the cows come home. That is not what the Presidential Records Act says. It does not say that Donald Trump gets to take the documents home and then, you know, do with them what he will. What, you know, whatever he'd like. That's not quite how that works. So what I'm going to do is talk about what's in the indictment, which I have with me. I have read, have you? I obviously it's best, you know, for the electorate, for people who are going to vote or have opinions or whatever, it's best that we have the information and we work from the same place and the same set of facts, and then we move forward as, you know, an educated populace. That said, I know most people have not read the indictment, will not read the indictment in large part, and I'm not passing judgment, but in large part because you got things to do. You got a life, you got kids, you got a family, you've got all kinds of stuff going on, which is, by the way, why I'm here. So I have read it. Again, I do hope that you do read it. It doesn't take very long to read. Quite a few of the pages, there's like a group of pages that are like all the charges. And there are a few pages that are like, this is what's in the documents. So the sort of the narrative that is laid out in what's called a speaking, this is what they call a speaking indictment. I'm no lawyer, but I just watch a lot of them on TV and I read a lot. And in the last, I don't know, how long has Trump been on the scene? It's been like 8 years now. He came down the escalator in 2015 and we're in 2023. So in the last 8 years, almost 8 years, I have read more legal briefs than I ever thought I would need to, because it was like, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to law school. Well, maybe I will go to law school, but I've never had a desire to go to law school or to, you know, to be this immersed in the law. But I never thought we'd have a president. And I won't even just say a president. I'll say somebody who has so much power over my life that I, you know, that I need to. If I had a person, you know, in my life, like let's say a husband who was doing some dirty dealings, I might find myself this immersed in the law. I'd be over here at night, you know, reading up on the law. Or if I had, if my, you know, mother or my parents growing up were, you know, doing stuff, I might be like, what does the law have to say about this? So it isn't just the president. It is somebody who has a level of control, not dominion, but a level of control over my life. And that is in large part why I think that so many of you do and or should pay attention to politics, because this stuff has a very real effect at the end of the day. So that said, let's just sort of get into it. So a couple of, when Trump left office in 2021, January 20th at 12 noon, well, he left the White House at what, maybe 9 o'clock in the morning. He had some little cheesy event at the airport on his way out of town. Normal presidents sort of go to the inauguration and then greet the next president and all that. Of course, after January 6th and all the craziness, and then we had extra security and troops, and nobody wanted to see Trump, and he had just been impeached a second time and all that. So it was like, okay, he's got to go, just like, bye. So before noon, right, when he got onto the airplane, he was still president of these United States and had whatever those powers that come to you are, right? So like access to security and top secret information and all that. So he packed his bags, he and his family, to leave the White House, and with him took a bunch of boxes. And of course, nobody knew what was in the boxes at the time because nobody was sitting there watching him as he packed. But he took these boxes. So at the moment that he left Washington, D.C. as president, he was entitled to have access to top secret or classified information. By the time he got to Florida, to his destination, got off the plane and went on his merry way, and it became 12 noon, he was no longer entitled to any of that information. And Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, quickly revoked any security clearances that Donald Trump has. So at that point, anything that he possessed was unlawful. Okay, that's one. Two, not only, you know, yes, he could have some access to it, but a lot of the information is information. And we really need to think of this in terms of information, not documents and not boxes, as he puts it, the boxes hoax. Because if he reduces it to boxes, then it doesn't sound so serious. But it's the information that he has, at classified information that he has access to. So anyway, a lot of that was stuff he really should not have had. He could go look at it in a secure location. Some of it he could have. How he got it is not quite clear. They definitely don't spell it out in this indictment. They really just are sort of like, it's a foregone conclusion that he's president, he's entitled to it, he had it, and we're going to let's for the sake of argument, say he's supposed to have it, and that's that. So that's how they've treated this. Similarly, Mike Pence had some documents that he shouldn't have had, and Joe Biden had some documents that he shouldn't have had. So the difference is, and let's get this out of the way quickly, once they are like, oh, here's some documents, whether they knew they had them previously or didn't know or stumbled upon them or whatever, they were like, oh, I shouldn't have this. Y'all come, FBI, whoever, you come, feel free, look through my closets, my drawers, my storage, my Corvette trunk, my storage down in Chinatown, my this, my that. Wherever, all the places that Trump and his minions have said that, you know, Joe Biden has all these documents hidden, they're like, go ahead, look, take whatever. So they found a handful of documents over here at Joe's summer house there and his main house there and his downtown office over there. And they found some stuff at Pence's home over here and Pence's weekend home over there or whatever. They took that stuff back and that was the end of that. Special counsel investigations were opened in both the Pence and the Biden cases. Pence's case has closed without any fanfare. There are no charges. I don't believe I've heard any conclusion on Joe Biden's, but presumably Joe Biden's is or will close without any charges, because again, they were like, oh, I shouldn't have had this, my bad, take it back. Had Trump done that, we wouldn't be here. But instead of saying, y'all want your documents. Let me give them to you. He's like, what documents? I don't have any documents. So Trump leaves the White House. He's got this whole batch of documents. When I say batch of documents, he's got boxes, boxes upon boxes, hundreds of boxes that he took from the White House, stacked up with stuff, whatever stuff he's got. Some of the stuff you can see from the pictures are like newspaper clippings and photos of him. And there's, you know, notes, and there's, you know, cheeseburger wrappers, or there, you know, whatever, whatever it is that he's got. But intermingled with that stuff is a classified document here, a classified folder there, top secret thing over here, you know, Five Eyes thing over here. So you've got all these different levels of things, but they're like, this is slid into this box, and this is over here in this box, and the four documents over here, and the five over there. And it's, so it does make you wonder, it certainly made me wonder, is this, are they just sort of in there willy-nilly? Or is this part of a strategy to hide them sort of in plain sight? Well, I'm just going to, you know, take this war plan and I'm going to slide it over here between the pages of, you know, a recipe and a ad for, you know, some tennis shoes at Big Five Sporting Goods. It's like, why are these things all over the place, all willy-nilly? Okay, so Trump has all these boxes, and way back when, in 2021, after he leaves the White House, the National Archives says, there are some things that we know that should exist that we don't have. So they've had time now to go through whatever they do have. And they're like, there are some things that are missing that we know for a fact should be here. So they reach out to Trump or Trump's people, and they're like, hey, you know, we need you to hand over everything. Whatever you've got, please, you know, send it our way. So some stuff got handed over, you know, it took them a while, whatever. But eventually they hand over like 15 boxes of stuff with some stuff in it. Okay. Time, they go through that stuff, time passes, and they're like, oh, wait, we're missing some more stuff. So they go through this process, and then ultimately, now we find ourselves in like 2022. And they're like, okay, we've been asking you, now they're getting serious, we've been asking you for this stuff, you haven't delivered it, we're going to involve the FBI, because this stuff that we know to be out there is missing. You're not giving it, you're stonewalling, and we want it back. So Trump's like, okay, you know, whatever. Here's a handful of other things. Not good, again, not good enough. So eventually they do involve the FBI. The FBI issues a grand jury is convened. The grand jury discusses, they decide they're going to issue a subpoena. So when they issue a subpoena, it's like, okay, we are formally demanding that you hand this stuff over. So again, if you were innocent, you'd be like, oh shoot, they're really serious. I thought I could hold on to it, blah, blah, blah. Let me go. Okay, fine, here. But no, what Trump does, it start to move documents around. So he gets a subpoena in early May. March. I think like March 10th. I'm sorry, May. Like May 10th. He gets a subpoena. He goes to his bag man, Nauta, or his body man, as they call him. He goes, a valet. He goes to him and he says, you know, he's got him moving boxes, and him and another employee, employee one and employee two. They're moving boxes around and they're doing stuff. But anyway, so Trump gets, tells his lawyer, or his lawyer tells him, you've got to hand these documents over. And I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version. You got to hand these things over, these documents over. I'll look through your boxes so that we can be responsive to this subpoena. You have to do this. Trump is like, okay, if we must. So they make a plan on the 23rd of May. They make a plan that he's going to come back on June 2nd and go through the boxes. Between the 23rd, when they make the plan, and June 2nd, when he comes to go through the boxes, Trump takes the boxes out of the storage room A, where the presumably all the boxes are, and he starts moving boxes around. And they're going through the boxes, they're taking stuff out of the boxes, he's having Nada bring the boxes up to him in the private residence at Mar-a-Lago. He's presumably going through the boxes, and then they're moving the boxes, and there are boxes in the storage room, there's boxes in the bathroom, there's boxes in the basement, there's boxes in the pool room, there's boxes over here, the boxes in the ballroom, there's boxes on the stage, there's boxes in the actual shower, there's boxes everywhere, and it's this giant shell game. So on June 2nd, the lawyer comes back. This is Corcoran, by the way, who's identified as like lawyer number one. But when he comes back, when he comes to do this search, he's directed to storeroom A. Well, Trump and Nanta know that the boxes have been moved. Some boxes are there, but they know because they moved the boxes. So they're like, yeah, go over there in storeroom A, look through those boxes. So he goes in there 2-3 hours, goes through a bunch of boxes, comes up with like 37 new documents that are classified and top secret and all this. So he's like, oh, okay, well, I found these. So then they had to respond to the subpoena, and you respond to the subpoena with an attestation, with a letter that says, you know, we sign our names, we swear that we've looked through everything, a diligent search. This is what we found. This is all that's there. Well, at Trump, so when Corcoran is done looking through the boxes, he goes to meet Donald Trump in the dining room, and Trump's like, "Did you find anything? What'd you find? Does it look good? Does it look bad? How does it look?" And Corcoran's like, "Oh yeah, well, we found these documents, and we've got to secure them, and yeah." And then Trump is like, well, why can't we just hide them? Why don't we turn them in? Do we have to play ball with them? Can we? And all this stuff, these conversations have been recorded. They've been documented. They've been, because they're a den of vipers. All of them are throwing each other under the bus or trying to cover their own butts and all this other stuff. So he's documenting these conversations. He figures out, oh, Trump is trying to ensnare me in his criminality, and he starts taking notes. So Trump is like, well, if we gotta, you know, whatever. So they hand over these 37 documents. They put them, they sign, you know, tape them up, do whatever, hand them over. Corcoran, lawyer number one, is like, I'm not signing my name on it. Let's get a different lawyer. So Christina Bob, lawyer number three, comes into the picture, because you got employee one and two and lawyer one, two, and three and all this. So he gets this other lawyer to come and sign her name on. She's like, yeah, I'll sign it. Okay, that's what kind of lawyer? Okay, I'm just going to put that aside for the moment, but I don't want a lawyer who's like, yeah, I'll sign, I will attest to something, put my law license, my bar card on the line for something I didn't even look at or investigate or search or whatever, but she can do her. So they get all the, she signs off on it. Well, part of the charges, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the charge. I'm not going to get into the like specifics and all that, but part of the charges is getting someone, effectuating someone to sign off on, you know, the conspiracy to get somebody to sign off on something you know to be untrue, right? To get them to lie on documents. That's against the law. You don't get to do that. getting people to, I'm actually going to look at it. So willful retention of documents. So for Donald Trump, charges 1 through 31 are of the 37 are individual documents within that. Then there is the conspiracy to obstruct justice. That is to stop them from doing their investigation, to put up all these roadblocks and all this. Well, we know that he did it. Yes, technically you're innocent until proven guilty, but we know that he did it. We know that they were like, we want the documents. Trump even told us, they want the documents, they're mine. You know, no, so we know what he did. Withholding documents or records, concealing documents or records, and a scheme to conceal, you know, so part of that is the conspiracy with Nauta and this other, you know, the other employee who was helping move boxes. And then there's false statements and representations and all of that. So that's the deal with the documents. Now, what are the documents? What is the content of the document? So again, Trump had this employee, a couple of employees help him, and they're moving boxes like a shell game, moving them around, trying to stay one step ahead of the law, putting them on airplanes, moving them across state lines, moving them from this storeroom to that storeroom and all this other stuff. Why Trump didn't take all the documents out of the individual boxes, put them all in one nice, neat little satchel, and then just, you know, tuck that away is beyond me. But I guess I'm not a criminal, or maybe I am a criminal. I just would make a better criminal. But it's like the moving of these boxes is so, you know, they've got video. They were able to ascertain the surveillance video, probably because somebody flipped and shared it, but they were able to see. That's how they knew that where the documents were there, because they are looking at video. They got the video got turned over, and that was part of how they got the subpoena. And then they're like, yeah, we know that the documents are there. And his mere possession of the documents was in and of itself breaking the law. So part of the way you get a subpoena is by proving to a judge or demonstrating to a judge that the law is actively being broken, right? So that you've got something and you're moving it from hither and yon. That's why, you know, he was able to get the search warrant. I'm sorry. So once he was not responsive, or once they determined that he still hadn't handed over everything in the subpoena after the June 3rd, when they handed it over, and then a couple of months later, they're like, they've gone through the boxes, they look at the video, they're like, this isn't everything. That's when they went and got the search warrant. And with the search warrant, they came. Well, from that moment on, Trump has been, you know, oh my God, they raided my home, and it's a crime, it's the most, you know, obscene thing that's ever happened in the history of, and it's a Democrat hoax that's the likes of which the world has never seen, and all this other foolishness. And it's like, none of that has anything to do with anything. Yes, people will fall for it because it sounds, you know, if he says it, now he's got the whole Republican chorus singing from the same hymnal. Then, yeah, I mean, I guess people who listen to them will be like, wow, you know, they're doing something to Trump that they didn't do to Joe Biden. And what about Hillary's emails? And what about this? And what about that? And they are not the same. Those people were like, okay, here's the information that I have. Here are the documents that I have. Here's this, here's that. Come in and look. Hillary testified for 11 hours in front of the, you know, the Benghazi thing. And she testified over here. You know, just every step of the way, people have cooperated. Trump is the one who has not. And he has tried to push one side against the other. So anyway, so they come back. They did not raid the place. They executed a search warrant. They searched for specifically what they were looking for, and they found like hundreds more documents because he had them, right? So what is in these documents? Well, the documents span, you know, a lot of things, but they do include various security levels of security, from confidential to classified to top secret to Five Eyes, where only like specific people in the world can see them, just a handful of people, or on a need to know basis. So these are things that are, that range from who knows what to Lord knows what, right? But we do know among those things, there were a couple of things that I want to point out. One was an active military operation, an operation that was actively going on during Biden's administration. So if this was just stuff that Trump had been briefed on when he was president, he knew it in his head, maybe didn't remember, but he just had some paperwork that reinforced something he already knew, or what, you know, that wouldn't make it better, but it might not be quite the sting. But the fact is that he's taking documents that have not been declassified, and we know they weren't declassified because part of what they've got him recorded saying is, well, I could have declassified this when I was president, but I didn't. So it's still a secret, but I'm going to let you see it. That's not okay. That's, as the kids would say, that's no bueno. So he's got these documents. So one was an active operation. We don't know if that's like Russia and Ukraine. We don't know what that is, but it was some active operation. Well, we have a different president who is doing whatever it is that he's doing, which he's entitled to do because he was voted to do that and he was sworn in to do that. And then you've got this other person over here sharing the secrets or talking about it willy-nilly to guests at a country club, a tacky country club at that, that apparently has boxes on the stage in the middle of the public space, which is, it's like, what kind of, anyway, I'd ask for a refund. Another document, and this is one that's got a little bit more airplay, but Mark Milley, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs while Trump was president, and keep in mind, these are all Republicans that are spilling their guts, that are sharing their secrets, that are recording him, that are taping him. These are not Democrats. This is not a Democratic hoax. This is not some witch hunt by Democrats cooked up by, you know, Adam Schiff and you know, Nancy Pelosi or whatever. These are things that Republicans are reporting. Anyway, so when Trump was still president, Mark Milley thought toward the end of Trump's presidency, in the interregnum, in those last couple of months after he had lost during the lame duck session, after he had lost, but before he stopped being president, because he was being so bizarre and the election was a hoax and it was stolen and it was this and it was that, Mark Milley was like, I don't know what this man might do. He might try to launch some sort of attack or something like that in order to stay, to, you know, to have an excuse to declare martial law, to stay in office or whatever. He didn't know. And that reporting got out. I think it was, I want to say it was Susan Glasser. Might have been Maggie Haberman. I think I want to say it was Susan Glasser, who reports with her husband, Pete. I can't think of his name. Doesn't matter. It does matter, but I can't think of his name right now. Anyway, so there had been reporting that Trump was not, might do whatever. And I think everybody sort of wondered what he might do, you know, without the reporting. Well, apparently Mark Milley drew up some plan, like look, Trump, if you did this, this is what this would look like. It isn't some easy little, you know, we go drop a bomb and then we, you know, that's the end of that. If we do this, then this would happen. And if that happens, then this happens. And so he sort of mapped out this scenario of what something like that might look like. So then now, after the fact, after the reporting got out, and Trump is like, God, you know, he made me look like I'm an idiot, you know, like I'm a untethered, you know, whatever. Trump is now trying to convince people, I wasn't going to do that. I never would do that, blah, blah, blah. And that was, and he came up with the plan. It was his idea. It was, so one of the documents that he showed were these war plans for if we attacked Iran. We know now that it's Iran. If we attacked Iran, this is how that would play out. That is not something, I don't care what you think about Donald Trump. If you think he's the best president ever, the most ambitious, the most beautiful, brilliant mind, whatever it is that you think of him, you cannot think that it is okay that a president, a person, a military, but anybody would take war plan, actual war plan, like actual, like, if we did this, these allies would do this, and then this would happen, and then these people would come, and that you would actually put that out, that somebody could sit in a meeting with a reporter, because the reporter is like, oh, well, we heard that you were going to do that. No, I wasn't. I'm going to prove it. Here, look at my document. Look at this piece of paper. And then you start waving around this piece of paper and showing people war plans. You cannot think that that's okay. So, not just me saying it, I'm gonna play a quick clip. It's not a quick clip, it's actually a little long, but it's of Ali Velshi interviewing John Brennan. And we'll talk a little bit about it on the other side, about what's contained in these documents.
Insight into this, because there are 31 counts as it relates to this, what we call the Espionage Act. And I do think that they are serious. So there are people who thought the stuff that happened in Manhattan that Donald Trump is charged with don't really affect them or their lives. There are some people who think moving boxes around between Mar-a-Lago or Bedminster and the White House doesn't really affect their lives. And these are arcane laws that don't matter. But in fact, showing people battle plans, if that's what happened, or showing people maps they shouldn't see, actual, real, important classified information that affects war and people's lives, that does matter.
It matters a lot to every American, and it should worry them that a former president of the United States left unsecured for so long national security secrets that reveal, again, nuclear capabilities, some of our capabilities around the globe. When I looked at those 31 documents that are listed in that indictment, and to look at the classification and the controls on it, they relate to human source networks. They relate to signals intelligence based on our intercepts. They relate to satellite imagery. They also relate to the intelligence we get from clandestinely deployed sensors around the globe. And these are the insights that we have from intelligence, whether they be human sources or technical sources, that allow us to make sure that we take the appropriate steps to protect this country. And the fact that Donald Trump so cavalierly and carelessly and recklessly allowed these documents to be left unsecured for so long in a facility, Mar-a-Lago, that it would be an easy intelligence target for foreign intelligence services. And really, I think, just shows how much he just disregarded not only the rule of law, but the safety and security of his fellow citizens.
So again, I don't care how you feel about Donald Trump personally or what job, you've got to understand that your safety, and think about, you know, and I'd imagine everybody listening to me right now knows somebody or has somebody in their life, a neighbor's son or daughter, them, their family, their own son or daughter, their teacher, their friend, somebody who's in the military. You know, most people are probably not, you know, 1 or 2 degrees of separation from somebody in the military. We would send our children off to war or off to war zones or hot zones around the world, and somebody is so loose and cavalier with such important stuff because of their ego. Maybe it's because they're going to sell it. We don't know. And I will say, you know, we know what documents they included in this indictment. It's reported that there is much worse stuff, but they couldn't really share the much worse stuff because then they'd have to reveal the contents in open court. And that's not, so they don't need to, but they can use a few things as examples. But it cannot be okay with us that Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Barack Obama or Greer McVeigh or anybody is just out there with this content all loose and willy-nilly. And again, John Brennan, who's former head of the CIA, he's just incredulous. An interesting just little side note, a few years ago, maybe in the middle of Trump's presidency, John Brennan went on some show, I don't remember, but I do recall the time that it happened. And he said something that Trump didn't like, and Trump revoked his security clearance. So John Brennan, a lot of people have maintained security clearance because they still train people who are active. I mean, we need the brain trust, right? We need people who have experience with war and peace and all these kinds of things to still be able to come in there and train new people, train future generations, help explain stuff, lecture, you know, go around the world, be ambassadors and all these kinds of things. So yes, some people still have security clearance. Trump stripped him of his because of his ego. So you're gonna like not let somebody who knows how to be stoic and responsible with that information, you're just gonna dismiss him while you're out there just showing literally like the pool boy and some random reporter. And if we all remember in the early days of Trump's presidency, he invited the Russians into the Oval Office. So he has shown from day one that he can't be trusted with this content while he has spent the last 8 years, you know, talking about Hillary and classified documents and lock her up and all that other stuff. So Jonathan Turley, who's a lawyer, I want to say he's a Harvard professor or something. I used to like Jonathan Turley until he testified at one of Trump's impeachment hearings, and you know, and he just sort of changed somewhere along the way and like drank the Kool-Aid. I think now he might be like realizing, you know, this is not the man that I want to lose my entire reputation for. But he doesn't think that, you know, I think he thinks that Trump is maybe going to face a little bit of trouble. Let's listen to Jonathan Turley.
This is a devastating indictment. It has a great number of witnesses that are quoted, and these quotes are coming from statements under oath. And so they're not likely to change. This audio tape that you just referred to is itself really sort of breathtaking. It contradicts what the president has previously said. And so the question is whether the president is better running against this case than defending against it. Because if he waives a speedy trial, he could put this trial on the other side of the election. And by then he could be president and he could pardon himself.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to pardon himself, but he'll try. I don't think he's going to win. But, you know, what do I know? So is there going to be a trial? First of all, Trump could plead guilty. Hear me out. And I was thinking this, and then Rachel Maddow mentioned this the other night on their MSNBC's coverage. But what has he got to lose? He could say, yeah, I have the documents, because he's already told us he has the documents. Yeah, I have the documents, whatever y'all say. And, you know, especially because he's been the judge who's been assigned to this case, supposedly randomly, is the same judge who earlier in this case was trying to get stuff thrown out and assign a special master to look at the documents and all this. Trump appointed her, and she seems to be feel some sort of allegiance to Trump. So, you know, if she doesn't recuse herself, she will probably be the judge throughout the duration of this case. And Trump could go and somehow get, you know, a slap on the wrist. Okay, well, you can't touch classified documents for the next 2 years. Well, he wasn't going to do it anyway because Joe Biden isn't going to allow it. So, you know, and just for the record, the way that when you're president, just by being president, you get access to all our secrets. You know, we just open up the floodgates and you get access to all of that. And you get to allow other people who may or may not have passed the background check. Most people get their security clearance by going through a very stringent process that takes weeks, if not months, to go through. And they're looking at your background and your elementary school teacher and everything you ever wrote and did and said. And do you have a record? And all you know, what do you owe money? Do you have, are you, you know, would you be vulnerable to bribes and foreign, you know, threats and all this other kind of stuff? Most people go through that process. So the people, most people who have security clearance are people who are trustworthy. They are people who have earned the right to have the access, and they understand how important it is and how vigorously they need to adhere to the rules and do the right thing. If you're president, you know, I mean, I suppose I could run for president and I could win. And all of a sudden I get all this access to information. That's just how it works. That's how it worked for him. And he quickly was like, oh, this is worth a lot of coin, right? This is worth a lot. What his whole family had. You got Jared and Ivanka over here that got hundreds of thousands, millions, while they were quote unquote working in the White House. And then Jared comes out with a $2 billion and, you know, fund from the Saudis. You got Melania, who early on was all, you know, upset because she couldn't do some branding of her clothes and her style and all that because she's first lady and everybody loves the way she looks. I mean, she's a model and she should get to market that and have, you know, White House sheet sets by Melania for sale. You know, you've got all these hangers on that everybody's got their hand in the pot. You know, they're selling their goods and the books and their wares and all this stuff. So, you know, so there is this monetization that Trump clearly wants to do. And he got in there and he had access to all this stuff, realized how valuable it was. And then from there, it was like, well, game on. And we gave him all this information. Because he didn't pay attention to it and really make mental notes or know what he's looking at or pay attention, he had to wait and sort of abscond with the stuff on the back end. So, you know, so here we are. But I want to point out that Jack Smith, special counsel who brought these charges, who brought this indictment, and Trump will appear in court on Tuesday the 13th. In Miami. And I don't think Jack Smith is all that worried about who the judge is, frankly. But again, Trump could plead guilty, try to get, you know, a slap on the wrist. It's like, oh, my bad. Okay, I won't do that again and move on. And that would, I guess, work out well for him. He could, he probably won't. That probably would be the smartest thing. Because it'd be like he could just sort of, you know, in a marketing sense and imagine the air quotes that I'm holding up. They're like, yeah, I'll plead guilty to whatever they say, right? You know, to this trumped up charge or whatever. He could do that. And then, you know, now the penalties for their 37 charges against Trump. The penalties range from about 3 years, I think, on the low end to 20 years. Generally, that stuff would not run consecutively. It would run concurrently. And, you know, they're not going to do the 20 years for this one and 20 years for that one and 3 years for this and three, which would equal well over like 100 years and, you know, a couple million dollars in fines. You know, maybe get 3 years, 5 years, 2 years, you know, maybe gets probation. Who knows what he gets if he pleads guilty and just is done with it and hopes that he can negotiate some sort of deal or that the jury would be sympathetic and then he could sort of walk. But knowing him, he's going to fight it because his ego won't allow him to do anything else. And he's going to keep talking. He's already talking because he's on the campaign trail and he's talking about, you know, Jack Smith and Jack Smith's wife and this person's a liar and this person's a criminal and this, whatever, all the stuff. Jack Smith said in his statement that they're still investigating. So the investigation isn't over, right? They're still taking notes and he's probably messing himself up further. But let's listen to Lisa Rubin, who's a reporter, contributor at MSNBC. And she talks about Trump's inability to keep his mouth shut.
Lisa, it strikes me that you have Trump on the trail downplaying this, but also mocking DOJ. How are prosecutors who are going to bring this case watching and processing what Donald Trump is saying?
I think they're watching what he's saying all the time because, Alicia, as we know from watching the E. Jean Carroll trial, this is a person who is the worst witness against himself and oftentimes does it in ways that are recorded, right? We have the Bedminster recording here that's memorialized in the indictment. That's where Donald Trump effectively said, look at this. This is a secret document. And I should have declassified this when I was still president and I can't anymore. That's the equivalent of the Access Hollywood tape in the E. Jean Carroll trial. And he may still go on to say things on the trail and beyond that will further serve as evidence against him in any trial of this indictment.
And to think he could.
So he could do any number of things, but what he can't do is shut his mouth. Now, I want to shift and talk a little bit about the political climate. So Trump, one of the arguments that he makes is, I'm running for office, I'm the front runner, and because I'm leading everybody on both sides of the aisle, like he's beaten Joe Biden and he's beaten the next closest person is DeSantis, what's his name? DeSantis. Yeah, Trump has so many nicknames for people, it's hard to keep them straight. But Trump would have us believe, and I don't know if it's true, I haven't seen polls in the last few days, but that he's just beating everybody. Well, first of all, can we just acknowledge everybody else is just now getting into the race because this is the time that normal people get into the race. Even when Trump ran and got into the race in 2015, he did it in, you know, what, 2015, about 15 months ahead of the election, not 2.5 years in advance. He only got into the race because he knew all this was coming. Wake up, people. He knew this was coming and he wanted the cover of being, he wants to be able to say, they're coming after me because I'm running. That is not. They're coming after you because you're a criminal who keeps crying. And it isn't even that you did it and then you're like, ooh, let me stop. It's like you did it and then you double down and then you've got this other crime. You're over here. Jack Smith is still investigating you for January 6th and the insurrection you caused while Fannie Willis is over here investigating you for, you know, trying to steal the election with fake electors and this scheme and find me 11,780 votes. Meanwhile, Tish James up in New York has got your company on lockdown because you're a criminal over there, and then you sexually assaulted, you're held liable for sexually assaulting E. Jean Carroll, and then and defaming her, which you then doubled down on the defamation, so she's now added to that. And then you got Alvin Bragg over here, and then it's like, oh, well, it's all the Democrats. Well, that's not the only place you've done your crimes. It's just for some reason, Republicans won't hold you accountable. And I don't quite understand that from a political standpoint, because you would think that they'd want you out of the way. You would think that they're like, well, we're running against him, and it doesn't really help us if he's, first of all, it doesn't help you if he's your nominee, because yeah, the diehard Trump supporters, the MAGA people, all 6% of them are going to be like, yeah, you know, no matter what he does, 32% of the Republican Party, which is like 26% of the voting population. So it isn't even like half the country. But those people are like, you know, yeah, no, it doesn't matter what he does, and he's my guy. You know, okay. Well, the other people, the sort of rational ones, will be like, I just don't want the, I want off this treadmill. It's just, it's too much. It's, you know, who's focused on me and my problems and the economy and the potholes in my street, and who's focused on, you know, the environment and the clean air and the superstorms, and you know, and it's like, but we're all so fixated on this Trump thing because he just keeps going and going. So anyway, this next clip is Chris Sununu, who is the governor of New Hampshire, who's not going to run. He said he's not going to run. But he is just like, Republicans, you have been given, if you're running against this guy, you've been handed, who running for office against a an opponent wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, he's got these 37 charges in addition to the 30 however many charges that Alvin Bragg had that are still percolating out there. So let's listen to Sununu.
This is a devastating indictment. It has a great number of witnesses that are quoted. And these
is really serious stuff, without a doubt. And he has to be held to bear. I'm actually a little surprised the other candidates running against him for president are not more aggressive about calling out for what it is. It's a huge problem. And mostly it's a huge problem for the Republican Party. Once again, the former president is just a terrible message bearer for the Republican Party and is scaring independents away.
Does it surprise you? I mean, that Nikki Haley or Tim Scott or others haven't been vocal about this?
Yes. Yes. Look, why? You're down 40 points in the polls. I don't know why they're doing it.
Why are you surprised in the polls. By it, I guess is my question.
Well, they're running against him. When you're running in a race, you're trying to beat the guy ahead of you. You're trying to knock him down, you know, and given all the things in the rap sheet there that is, you know, a mile long, you think that they'd be more aggressive. I get it. They're trying to focus on the problems around DOJ, and there are real problems there. That place needs an overhaul. No question. We could do hours on that. But let's focus at the facts at hand. You're running against a guy with 37 indictments against him. You almost look like you're defending him at this point. Does not look like a serious candidate that's willing to take him on over the next 6 months to knock his poll numbers down and shoot you to the top. Either you want to run for president and beat the guy or you don't.
So it makes you wonder. So I apologize for a couple of glitches that I had there. I actually started playing the wrong clip and then switched and then had glitches. Nevertheless, he's right. It's like if you are genuinely running, you know, I'm running for president. I've got right now, I don't know, there are 5, 6, 7 people in the race. There's Nikki Haley, there's Trump, there's Pence got in, Chris Christie got in, Ron DeSantis, some other guys, the governor of North Dakota, whatever his name is. You know, so, I mean, there's 5, 6, 7, Tim Scott from South Carolina, you know, so you got a field now. The bigger the field, by the way, the more likely Donald Trump will win because he's going to divide and conquer. But no, because nobody will get enough votes to knock him out, and because the votes will be diffused across, you know, so many people, and then his that base is going to stick with him, so he'll probably end up with the nomination. That said, now's your chance if you're genuinely running. Well, I'm not convinced that they're genuinely running. And that, again, that was Chris Sununu on with Anderson Cooper. This next clip, and this is, I think, the last clip that I'm going to play for you today, but this next clip is Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh used to be a Republican congressman, and he was a Tea Party nut, right? I mean, but he's had his sort of come to Jesus. He lost his seat in the House, didn't have a job, and then needed health care, got Obamacare, and it was like, oh, well, you know, maybe Obamacare is not so bad after he had railed against it for, you know, ages. So Joe Walsh, he has been sort of fervently anti-Trump for some time, but he's not like anti-Trump, anti-Republican, or anti, quote unquote, conservative. He's just like sees Trump for who he is. And he's like, you know what? At the end of the day, it isn't that these people don't, you know, they're afraid of Trump. They just they're cowards. They don't want to do the hard work. They don't want to run against him. What they want is for him to just go away and make it be somebody else's fault.
Here's the deal. No serious challenger to Donald Trump is going to criticize him or attack him. They're not even trying to beat him, Allie. All they're hoping for is that the justice system or a heart attack takes him out. But the party is gone. Our former party is an authoritarian embracing cult. If not Trump, Allie, who do they want? Who's the only other person even registering in the polls? It's Ron DeSantis. He's a Trump mini-me. There's no following for Mike Pence or Nikki Haley or Tim Scott or Chris Christie. It's hard to wrap your arms around the fact that one of our two major political parties is gone.
Charlie, they've got a guy who's leading by.
He's gone. It's gone. The Republican Party is gone. Doesn't mean it can't come back, but it would have to reconstitute itself. But in order to do this, and I've said this time and again, they have to rid themselves of the cancer. They've got to use any metaphor you want, rip the scab off the wound, rip the Band-Aid off the wound. They've got to get rid of the cancer. They got to do whatever it is. They've got to get in there and say, you know what, this one particular person, and yeah, I've got my opinions about their governing philosophy. I've got my opinions about conservatism and compassionate conservatism versus hardcore conservative. I don't know what they're conserving, you know, but we could have that conversation about politics and finding middle ground and, you know, making America be for everyone. But we cannot do it as long as a quarter of the country is living in some state of delusion, like a cult, where they cannot see that this one particular person who has infiltrated, whether he's got blackmailing people, if he's got compromise on them, or if they just want to be close to power, or if somehow it's like, you know, he's going to let us be the, you know, the best part of our worst selves. So we're going to go with it because we want to go back. We want to take, quote unquote, take our country back, whatever that means, take it back to like what, 1864? Is that where you want to take it back to or take it from or whatever? Again, another day. But it is clear that this one particular person does not have the best interest of the country at heart. He is not here to make America great. He is not here to help, you know, to all, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. He is not here to help working people have a better shake. He is here to get people agitated and mad at each other, fighting against their neighbors, all in service to keeping him in power. And until and unless that ends, and thank God for Jack Smith, you know, Bob Mueller, we have faith in him and waited a year or two for him and his investigation to unwind, only for him to be like, yeah, well, yeah, Trump did all these crimes. Or, you know, in his 450 page, which I read as well. But in that, it was like 10 counts of obstruction of justice. Those are crimes. It's like 10 counts of that. And then 10 counts of conspiracy or working with Russians or working with Russian information. And but to get nothing, to be like, here, Bill Barr, here's my report. I'm not recommending that we bring charges or, you know, impeach him or indict him or anything, because that's not what I was hired for. And so Bill Barr, and then Bill Barr just got up there and lied to us. So Trump just got away with it. He's been impeached twice. Democrats did the heavy lifting. Mitch McConnell even told us in the second impeachment, yeah, Trump did it, but I voted against it because, you know, process, procedure, whatever. Well, we know that you guys wanted the Democrats to do the dirty work. And then when the Democrats did the dirty work, you turned your back on, like, I don't know, 10 people did vote to convict, but they needed whatever, 17, whatever the number was. They needed the 2/3 majority. They didn't have it. And so again, Trump got to walk. And because of that, he gets to run. Because he got to walk, he gets to run. And I, for one, would prefer to not have another 4 years like that 4 years that we had, where, you know, Muslims can't come into the country and Mexicans are bad people and rapists, and where, you know, Black country, you know, African countries are places or shithole countries, and where, you know, babies are in cages, and where a million people die unnecessarily of COVID. He did not do a good job. The economy was not doing well before COVID, and it didn't do well after, until Joe Biden corrected the ship. So there are some Republicans that I might not vote for, but I could live with. You know, I actually sort of halfway like Chris Christie. I don't like the fact that he threw his team under the bus, under the proverbial bus, threw him off the bridge, I should say, because we know that he knows that the bridge was shut down day after day at his urging, that he let his team take the fall. That was like a bridge too far. But, you know, he's at least halfway sane. Was he on the Trump train? Yes. And frankly, anybody who was on the Trump train is like, no. But we need a period of time, like I said, for us to clean up our, you know, to get rid of the cancer, move on. And here we are with this case, 30 real charges, right? This is not that he slept with a porn star and lied to his wife or, you know, use his money. It wasn't like, you know, it's like, okay, fine, whatever. We'll see where that one goes. But this is like real national security that impacts us all. And we have got to be, we've got to stand for something. And if we don't stand for something, we will fall for anything. So I am happy that you joined me today. I hope I shed some light on what's in this indictment. And why it is important. And we're going to keep watching it. We're going to watch these other cases. And, you know, we're going to come back and we'll talk to you some more in the next episode of the Capital G Podcast. Again, I thank you for listening. I'm Greer McVeigh, and that was Politics with a Capital G.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Capital G. As always, you can find show and host information at capitalgpodcast.com and even more information and commentary on the Capital G blog, which you can also access through capitalgpodcast.com. If you liked what you heard, please share the show with your friends and subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform.